What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of The Textual Talk, where I'm your host, HD. This is episode 49. We got a lovely guest for you guys today, man. None other than Miss McKenna. And everyone might know her as CyberKenna, but we got to talk about a lot of things about how a little bit about her, how she got into cybersecurity, a little bit of her past when she was sysadmin, and why when you're doing system administration work, you're doing a lot of cybersecurity work, but you don't know it. And also, we get to talk about mentorship and cybersecurity and why it matters. So, hey, without further ado, let's introduce our guest. All right, and we are rolling. I meant to send this to you and Eric, but did y'all see that they're possibly working on Gear 6?
I did not know that.
Yeah, I saw it. It's a couple articles out that they're working on that right now, and I'm interested. I feel left out from y'all because I cannot find Series X. And then when I do find one, GameStop tries to make me put it on a payment plan and get extra stuff that I don't need because I already have Xbox All Access and all that crap. I just want the console. Listen,
I'm gonna put you on, right? I got mine straight from Microsoft. All right. They got some in stock. They still got some in stock. I'm going to send you the link so you can get it. Like, we need you to go ahead and get it. Come play with us. Come play Rocket League.
I'm ready. Hey, no, another game. My little brothers always say, hey, we on the game, but they catch me at the wrong time. I started playing a couple months ago. I hadn't played in a while. Is whatever the dodgeball game is, something city. Knockout City, I think that's what it's called. It's like you go around and you're hitting people with dodgeballs. Like, it's simple, but it's fun.
I don't think I've heard of that one. I mean, Eric, you put me onto some random game sometimes. Yeah. But I mean, like, so does my brother-in-law. He's always got us doing something.
So. Right. Yeah. And I've been trying to get y'all to play Brawlhalla for the longest. And for whatever reason, y'all hadn't tried to play yet. So I don't know what's going on with that.
I didn't even know. I don't even know what that is.
it's okay. It's a free game, and it's similar to Super Smash Brothers in a sense, but it's very simple. And you just get on there, and you can fight. You can be a master, or you could just spam. Either way, you'll enjoy yourself playing a game. And it's funner when you have teams like you do 3v3, or you can do 2v2 rank, or it could be a group of what, 8 of us, and we just decide to go against each other like we did when we were playing Gears.
I like that. I mean, I'm always down for fighting games, so I'll go download it. We play.
Yeah. And then my last thing I'm talking about is after the Xbox, I do want to get a Switch just so I could play some of my older Zelda games I used to love to play. One of the other iterations that I'll probably do on like another YouTube channel is like either me playing through walkthroughs or maybe streaming live some Twitch action maybe one day. I don't know. It just depends when I find the time. I say busy right now, but I'm planning to not be as busy pretty soon.
There you go.
That was a good little segue for everybody to come in. So, look, if y'all do want to play us on Xbox, I actually try to put our gamer tags in the description. Just letting you know, if you do want to play Brawlhalla with me, you won't win.
Is that a challenge?
No, I mean, so my biggest video to date is the Day in the Life of Security Analyst video, Work From Home. In that video, I put like, at that time, how I used to start my day was I would play Brawlhalla like a couple of matches in the morning just to kind of get my brain and stuff flowing when I wake up because it get me going, my hand-eye coordination. And then I went like to work, and I had people coming in on there about like, oh, man, we should play one time, whatever. Now, so I used to ask them what their game attack was.
Okay. But, well, people can add me, can play Naraka, Rogue Company. Now, that's the one I got to get everybody else on. And anything else that's weird, like what Eric be putting me on. Because that man got me on some weird games right now. He's always like, you play this, you play that. And I'm like, here we go again. I guess I'm going to be playing this.
Right. So, let's tell the listeners or the viewers, if you are watching this right now on YouTube and you're enjoying it right now, please hit the like button. And If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, go ahead and start subscribing or following the podcast. Mm-hmm. Those downloads really do help out the podcast. But anyways, let's do a simple question. Who is McKenna?
That's a really good question, because I'm trying to figure that out right now. Let me give the canned response. So I'm a security engineer right now in the fintech industry. Been in tech for 5+ years now. Shoot, came up through the ranks. I think like a lot of people who did, you know, when they came into tech a couple years back, you know, desktop support, moved up to like system admin, then, you know, made the transition over to security. But outside of, you know, the work that I do, I do a lot of volunteering for the Women's Society of Cyberjitsu. Started that, you know, 3 years or so ago, joined up as a member, enjoyed it, wanted to, you know, get my hand into leadership, help build out the Dallas chapter. And then decided I want to do a little bit more on the national level, went over to the webinars team. I lead that now. And then, you know, a big portion of who I am is mentorship and support for the community. So I think that's how a lot of people know me or get to know me, is a lot of the things that I do for our community. I try to, you know, provide resources, curated resources, whether I share them, I build them out, or I try to connect people with my network. So I guess overall, McKenna is a security engineer who cares about her community, as cliche and BS as that sounds.
I mean, let me see if I can get this to work. I don't know. It might come in late. It's not cliche at all. Like, you know, you saw me today talking about Jermaine. Shout out to the job father, man, because like, he kills it all the time on LinkedIn. And he, you know, he's unapologetic for that. But no, it's definitely needed. I think we need this more people, because everybody can't reach everybody. You know, you post what you post. You always post like some good things, especially, I'm not going to lie, I forgot a little bit about the Boolean searches when it comes to the job searching part of like using like LinkedIn or Indeed. And I use them like right now. I just put it in quotes and throw it in there. So definitely you are needed in the space. And we're actually going to touch on that mentoring portion and kind of what sparked that for you later on. But right now, let's focus on, you know, you said you worked your way up. Tell us about that and kind of, I guess, what found you wanting to actually even getting into like IT or whatever. Like, you know, let's talk about that.
Yeah. So like back in the day, I did accounting, like right out of high school, fell into accounting. I come from really, well, not necessarily a small town, but it's a, you know, I'm from Oklahoma City. It's not small. It's not a small city, but there's not a lot going on. At least when I was younger, there wasn't a lot going on. There wasn't a lot of options. So I fell into what was available. I hated it. I was bored, you know. And my husband, who was then my boyfriend at the time, he's just like, I know that you're not happy. You should do what you're good at. Tech was something that I was always interested in. I think, again, very cliche. I was the like tech person in my family. You know, I was the person that people came to when there was something wrong with their computers, their mobile devices or whatever. And so I decided I was going to make the switch, and I ended up getting an internship with the state government at the time as a desktop support individual. And mind you, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. Like, I didn't know the difference between an HDMI and a VGA. I didn't know the difference. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. But from there, I really focused on just learning as much as I could, talking to as many people as I could, just building my skills up. I eventually moved over to like a junior system admin role, learned a lot there. That's actually where my passion for security got started. I had a manager at the time who was having to do some NERC SIP compliance because I worked with a critical infrastructure, a power authority company. And I just kind of got really, I don't know, just sucked into it. I had never thought about how easy it was for attackers to shut down entire cities by hacking into, you know, a power authority system. So that freaked me out. And I was just like, yo, if they can do this, what else can they do? And it just kind of snowballed from there. And, you know, I made a few jumps. I kept doing the system admin thing. And then eventually I had the opportunity with a women-owned MSSP who let me come in and do some consulting security work. They go by Geek Girl Tech, ran by Jen DC. She's amazing. But her focus was really on supporting people of color, and giving them opportunities to get their foot in the door. And I really think that I would not be where I'm at right now as quickly as I got here without her help and her support. So shout out to Jen and Geek yeah. Girl Tech. They're amazing. And then, you know, just the work that I was doing, I got caught the interest of my now manager, and the rest is history. And now here I am. So yeah, the long nice. Version.
And I want to touch on something because you brought up pretty much doing system administration, right? Mm-hmm. And let me clip this. I have people I work with in the past that sometimes are doing help desk, but I always look at people doing help desk. And if I look at what they are responsible for in the job, say you're really doing like a lot of sysadmin work. So I sometimes change their title to sysadmin because it matches up. But I can't remember, and I may try to find it and put it right here on the video portion of this, but I remember I made a post talking actually about like system administrators. You're actually doing like a lot of security work and you don't realize it.
Yeah.
I kind of want you to touch on when you did system administration, how easy it was. I won't say easy. Nothing is easy when it comes to getting to cybersecurity, right? But how much stuff did you not realize was actually, and I cannot think of the word right now. I got like brain dead. But anyway, the stuff that was overlapping with stuff that you would do in cybersecurity, I don't think a lot of people really realize that, because sometimes like all jobs don't really take care of their sysadmins. However, sometimes keeping you as a sysadmin is a way to not pay you what you need to be paid. But a lot of times you are doing stuff, like a lot of times cybersecurity team can't do some stuff without that sysadmin. You got access to a lot. You're doing a lot of things. So briefly or long form, you know, we got time. What was that like? What were some of the things that you were doing that you didn't realize, oh, hey, this overlaps with like a cybersecurity role? Well, I'm actually doing stuff that's in cybersecurity. What were some of those things you're doing as a sysadmin?
Yeah. So like somebody posted on Twitter the other day, like, what was the first security thing that you ever did that you can remember? And I distinctly remember being asked to patch servers, look for vulnerabilities and patch servers using GFI LandGuard. Okay. And like, that was like the first thing I started doing. And then a lot of the other things I was asked to do was, and I think some people don't really think about this, but access management is a huge portion of security. And when you're setting up in users and like AD and you're pushing out, you know, group policies to them, or you're setting up those group policies, that's security work, especially if you're using, you know, like a compliance standard. For me, it was like CIS 20. I used a lot of that when I was first getting started as a framework for what was best practice, really, for like AD. And so like, it was just like basic things that I was doing that I had no idea was related to security or had a security bent to it. And I think this is a thing that a lot of people don't realize, is they think security truly is like a separate type of discipline. And it is, but security is like the icing on the cake of all these other technical skills, right? You have networking, you have system admin work, but security really is like this overcompensating icing on that cake. You can't have security without these other disciplines, without these other domains of of tech. Like really what we do at the end of the day is protect those things, at least on the blue side. I don't know about the red side. So, but like on the blue team side, it's a lot about, adding that extra layer of, you know, layer of security. And so I think a lot of people miss out sometimes on maybe you're already doing security work. But it, you know, maybe it's under a different title, like being a NOC technician or a junior system admin or even desktop support. I know I did a lot of security work when I was doing desktop support, but it was just like basic things that are a lot of the times in bigger companies given to a security team. You know, when you work for a really small company, they're not going to have a security team. And so you just kind of end up getting stuck doing security work without realizing that that's what you're doing. And that's what it was for me, because I worked state government and then I went over to really small ed tech companies. So like there was never more than like 80 people, you know, within the company. So it was like me and then like maybe one other person always on my team. So we did it all. Right. I got to touch a lot of different things. And it wasn't until I started realizing, you know, the compliance portion that I was just like, oh, I'm like actually doing legit security work. And I didn't even realize it. So you might have been doing that work and you don't even realize that you're doing some of that work.
Definitely. And if my listeners are doing help desk or sysadmin or whatever you're doing, she just told you, like, you are doing some stuff. Like, immediately when you said, hey, you were tasked with patching servers and finding vulnerabilities, that's vulnerability management.
Mm-hmm.
And they have jobs where that's all you do. And I tell people that all the time, like, because everyone is attracted to, like, the popular jobs. I'm like, companies need these people. You won't believe it, but shoot, even doing asset management is a cybersecurity job. It's a big one, and it's one that's underrated. If you go back to when you're talking about I was doing things I didn't know I was doing, as simple as it may sound, when I worked help desk, verifying who somebody is who they say they is actually a security practice.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I did worked for TSA, the people had to use smart cards, and they didn't have their smart card. We had a process where we had to verify them to make sure they were who they said they were, so they could access their machine. And in that, we used at the time, and I don't even know if people still use this, but we used to use Anacam. And it would push, it would send them a token, and we would use the numbers that they had in there to kind of call them or talk to like their manager to verify them. But even stuff like that were concepts that we were practicing that people didn't know. They just thought, hey, we're just fixing IT problems. I was like, no, you're doing some things. You're working in some access management, making sure, hey, does this person need access to this network drive? Help them recreate it. Like, it's a lot of things, you know. So that's a good thing when somebody sits down with somebody like you or me or any others with the experience in the field, we give them that courage to realize you have more skills than you think you do. And that's one of the things I always do as a coach. It just reminds me of, I don't even know, like, ops slept since then, so I don't even know if that was this week when DeJuan tagged everybody in that thing with the guy who got the knock, offered the knock position and really didn't feel like he knew enough to accept it. I just plainly said, hey, they believed in you, so you should start believing in yourself too. Like, some simple, like, my background with sports is like why, like, I try to give it people a straight, but also like, hey, like, you can do this. You know,
absolutely.
Football and boxing, that's what I put together. And hopefully, just coming from me, that was enough to help him out. I was like, man, you can do this. Like, oh, I think I added after that. It's like, nobody 100% knows everything of the new role they're about to do. And that goes for people that are 20, 10, 25 years in. It's always something new you're learning if you're taking a new role. So that little tidbit of advice that I threw in there, hopefully, you know, it helped that young man out with his, you know, his career, because I think most people, and this probably comes from Twitter or wherever, they're trying to tell people, like, you just got to know everything. And I'm like, no, you don't. That's why I tell people, hey, you don't even got to know everything on the interview. You could tell somebody, hey, I don't know that, but I can get you the answer after this and follow up and send them an answer. You never know.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's no way, let's be honest, like, again, tech in general, let alone, you know, security, it are massive behemoths of knowledge and expertise, and just like it runs the gamut, right? It's like, I like to think about it in the same way as like healthcare. Like a surgeon is not going to know the same thing as a primary, right? They're specialties for a reason, because you cannot know everything. And this idea that you got to know a little bit of everything, like, I think the days of being a generalist are dying, just simply because it's like, you really do have to specialize now. And even me, coming from a system admin background, where I did have to be a generalist because I was in such tiny companies, it's hard for me right now trying to learn how to specialize, because I have been a generalist for so long. I think nowadays it's just like, you literally can't do it all. It's just, it's too massive. It's too expansive. And with things, you know, by the time you learn something, it's probably irrelevant. You know, it's obsolete. It's been outdated. So it's just like, I don't know how anybody thinks that they can keep up with all of that knowledge and like know everything. Like, it's just, it's not possible.
Yeah, definitely. And while you were saying that, I was looking up the quote that was saying, cause see, people always try to say the quote wrong. I'm finna find it right now. See,
you're like, let me make sure I got this right.
It's, where is it at? Anyway, I'm going to paraphrase it. A lot of people try to say, they say half of the quote when they say, a man of many talents, but master of none. But I think the rest of it is like, it's better than a master of none or some crap like that. I don't know. I'll probably throw it in here. Like,
I know exactly what quote you're talking about. Yep.
I thought about the Floyd Mayweather interviews telling Brian Kenny, a man of many talents, so a master of none. But I'm like, I get it. You can't really master everything, but just never know. And I also would add, like, it's only certain roles. And here's the tricky part when it comes to cybersecurity, why sometimes it can be hard. Some of these roles do want someone to be a generalist in the realm of cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. They want you to know so many different things. And that's hard to do when you're just first starting out. Like, it's no way possible someone's going to know all these things they want you to know. I'm like, I get it. But then I'm like, when you think about what the role requires, I was like, and my mom's like, it don't even require that. That wouldn't even determine if, you know, if I was good or not at this. Like, I get it. You know, you took this from some job description somewhere, but no, man, that isn't what we need. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, or we can just move along. After the sysadmin role, what was that next role that you did?
So this happened during like the start of the pandemic. And so I didn't have a lot of things to do outside of my job. So I took on a second role as a security engineer consultant for Geek Girl Tech. And they specialize really in like supporting small businesses, and helping to give them like that security boost that they need. Cause I think like, crazy statistic of like something like 45% of small businesses are targets of attack. And so the focus was like coming in and helping to get those companies up to standard, like up to snuff, right, with their security. So I got to touch a whole bunch of different things, from like vulnerability and patching to compliance and risk. I got to learn gap assessments. You know, I got to come in and help POC, proof of concept, software and tools. You know, I really got to know their architecture, or lack thereof, and help to build it out and give, you know, like pointers on what they could do, on how they could improve. So that was really cool. That position, I feel like, gave me the opportunity to learn a lot. And I was doing that on the side of my system admin job. But the cool thing was, you know, at that company, I told my managers, like, hey, I'm really interested in, like, putting together some kind of security program here. Because we're taking care of student and teacher data for the state of Texas. And it's really important that we care about security. And so my manager was so nice, and he was really supportive of me doing that. And I got to put together like an endpoint security program there. And I really got to dig my hands into, you know, building out a solution, and trying to get us, you know, somewhat on par of where we should have been. So that was really cool. Like a lot of the things I was learning at Geek Girl Tech, I got to bring over to that job, and a lot of the system admin work that I was doing there, I got to bring over to Geek Girl Tech. So it was a real nice, merriment or marriage of those like skills. And I feel like that ultimately got me to where I'm at right now, where, now I'm a corporate security engineer. And that was something I was going to bring up, is like, especially if you're a system admin, I don't think you realize how very easy you can slip over into like enterprise security or like corporate security. Because it really is IT security at the end of the day, right? If you're doing system admin work, you're just adding that layer of security onto it, with your focus now being right, more so on securing those systems versus like administering those systems. So, if you're definitely like a system admin, or you're doing some kind of like system admin work, you could definitely make that move over to like enterprise security, corporate security, endpoint security, something like that, because you're already doing the work.
Yeah. And I was going to touch on, like, I thought about stuff sysadmins do, like, no. I got it. I had lost it, but I remember it. I want to say when the pandemic started, one of the biggest, I'm going to say least protected. One of the things a lot of like school districts didn't think about was the schools. And I've read so many things about schools getting shut down with ransomware, or all those things that they didn't think about. Because when you think about it, a school district, technically, I guess you could say maybe government, depending on like how the state is or whatever, or if it's independent, but they aren't geared to handle that type of stuff. They don't typically attract the top cyber talent, because I know for one, the pay possibly isn't there, because before then they might have didn't see the value of them, of which why you need those people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to see. I think I have a friend that's a school teacher. And I think they got like let out of school one day because I think their school had ransomware. And I just thought about that when you said, like, hey, we have teachers and students like information. Like, this is, you know, very, very important. Like, we can't just glance over that. Like, and, you know, you mix that in, like, that goes into why like hospitals like always are trying to get hit up for like ransomware and stuff like that. I remember what's the company? Is it Scripps Health? I think Scripps, like last year, I think, got hit with like ransomware. They just don't think about it. I think I was I was on one of those calls. I was working for MSS at the time. Chickens with the head cut off. Because they know they was doing. They didn't know. They never thought about that they would get hit, you know? I like to probably call ransomware, as almost right now, like, correlated to like a wreck. Some people think they'll never have a wreck. So some people choose to possibly drive without insurance, or they don't have the right insurance to say, hey, this person does not have insurance, then what? Which I think Texas makes you do uninsured motorists, but in the case of states that don't, that's what I kind of take it as. Like, hey, you didn't have any type of insurance for this. Which I've seen that as an industry as well. Like insurtech, like companies strictly that work like for insurance and things like that when it comes to ransomware and things like that. So it's just crazy all the different niches there are right now. But yeah, this ain't about me or like, you know, my soliloquies. Let's get into the transition after. I do not want to butcher it. I want to say you say it's like geek girl.
Geek girl tech. Yep.
Geek girl tech. Okay, so I'm right. I don't know where I got geek bitch from. I want to go into after that role, like the security stuff that you did, like after that, like what was the differences that you saw being like at maybe like a smaller company where you got to touch more to where you went to somewhere where you're a little bit more segmented to where, you know, you probably only had one or a couple of things you focused on without having to, you know, dip and dabble in a lot more things.
Yeah. So like after doing Geek Girl Tech and leaving that ed tech company that I was at as a system admin, I got my current position as a security engineer. And like you said, like the work is more separated. And so like my main focus is purely corporate security. You know, we have I'm part of a SOC team, not SOC, SecOps. And we're trying to build a SOC right now.
You said it right.
Yeah. But like that's like, it's been really interesting because now it's a lot more honed in, a lot more focused, especially because we're a bigger company and it's a company that's not necessarily a startup anymore, but still has very much startup culture and is like moving a little bit out of that. And so it's like a lot of the work I do is project focused. And so it's a lot less tinkering and more like deep focus on really specific, things. So like, for us, it's been like device authentication, building out, you know, a detection and response team. So before I had never really had experience with, alert monitoring and like detection and response, cause you just don't have that at small companies. So I've been learning that and that's been really interesting for me. I've gotten to do a lot of different things with like session control of SaaS, you know, products. A lot of the work that I did when I first came in was just getting a baseline of where we were at, like kind of trying to figure out what our baseline for our current state was. And then coming in and hardening, a lot of our, one endpoint devices and then like our SaaS and like Okta, hardening those to like industry standards. So that's what I've been focusing on a lot at this current position. We're moving forward now with like really gearing up to getting detection and response like up and running, which is like how I ended up bumping into you and Eric. Was I reached out and I was like, y'all know more than me. Can you help me? I don't know what I'm doing. If I'll just say like, if you're trying to get into a position where you're trying to learn how to do something and you're being asked to do something you've never done before, please reach out to me. Like just what I've learned then just like the last few months of being connected with you and Eric is incredible. Like it would have taken me so much longer to learn this material and learned how to be effective with building DNR. Like it would have taken so much longer had I not reached out and said, you know what you're doing. Can I ask you a question? And that's really what, you know, at the end of the day, everybody needs to do. Like if you want to learn, you need to reach out to people. You need to like reach out to the network and build one. And you all have not only helped me, but you've become good friends now too. So it's just like, you never know who you're going to bump into and who's going to end up supporting you and being there for you. But I digress. But yeah, so that's really been like the focus of my work has been so far. And it's really interesting and it is very different than what I'm used to because I, you know, it used to just be me and my director and he was just like, I trust you, do what you want. And I had access to the card and I went and spent what I wanted to spend, you know, within budget reasonings. But like, I really got to pick what was important to me to work on. And I could spend 6 months digging into whatever I wanted. Now it's way more focused. You know, I have OKRs. We go by quarters. So it's been an interesting shift, but it's been a really interesting challenge that I've enjoyed so far. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And the funny thing was that when me and you talked, it reminded me of the stuff that I have. And listeners, I've been kind of just teasing stuff for a while. It's really close to launching. But one of the things that I do talk about my LinkedIn course is about, you know, if you want to advance your career, learning about, you know, the KPIs and metrics, what's going on, like for your team or, you know, company wide. And that's what we briefly talked about. You know, some of the things that we tracked in our SOC. Mm-hmm. And I also think you probably have a newfound respect for like SOC folks with like the stuff that you're doing, like building it out. Because like the clip I just posted on Twitter and LinkedIn with Eric, like talking about like, hey, when people hear SOC, all they hear is, oh, entry level. They don't really realize what all goes into, you know, setting up a SOC. And not just setting up a SOC, but like a one that's going to be effective. Because you can just, I mean, you can set one up. That don't mean it's going to be good. But setting up something that's effective is crazy. And just like you said, when I was talking to a recruiter, I was telling you earlier about like, similarly to what you're doing, what that role consists of is probably the same thing. And I was telling them like, hey, if I need something, I have a network of like SOC people that I can reach out to that I could get advice on like how to do this or something that I don't know. And that's essential. That's something I haven't always had either. Like I was telling Eric the fact that he threw up, he posted like some foulest malware he saw while he was threat hunting. Mm-hmm. This week. And I was telling him that it did kind of remind me of some foulest malware I found when I did my last lead SOC role and sent it to our anomaly and detection guys. But I was just telling him, I was like, thanks for that, because, you know, it got my juices flowing again. Like, I feel like I'm washed. Like, I haven't did any SecOps stuff for like close to a year now. And it's just, it's very different. And you know, patiently trying to get back into that. It's got to be for the right price, of course, but it's just dope, guys. So what we're saying right in here is that you need a network and of people that specialize in different things that can help you, whether it's your career or if the people you know don't necessarily know what you need to know, but they know somebody that can help you out. So that's what's very important. That's why networks are important, because also with the networks comes with, hey, we got a rec, I ain't been posted yet, but you know, I thought about you first.
Yep.
You know, in my ebook, I talk about like, I think 70 or 80% of jobs don't even get posted publicly. They get the field by either internally or somebody refers somebody they know to the job. And most of the time, if that person that referred them is already like an established worker, that person probably don't even get interviewed. Like, I want to say that tough. Like, if they trust that person and they look at your resume, like, most of the time, like, you got it. Unless it's just something that they changed at the last second and don't pick you.
Yeah, it's definitely needed. And, you know, going back to what you said, like, I bet you have a whole bunch of respect for SOC. Like, bruh, the respect I have now for this for SOC work, like, it is intense and there is so much there. Like, you could spend your whole career, you know, in the SOC learning, you know, detection and response, alert monitoring, like scent. Like, it's just, it's insane to me how much goes into this. And yeah, I would definitely suggest it for someone who is like curious, someone who likes to dig into stuff, somebody who is just like, if you like to investigate and you like to get your hands dirty, I think it's an excellent spot to go. So like, I total respect for SOC work, DNR, you know, incident response, all that stuff. Like, it's amazing. It really is. And looking back, you know, had I come in to security in a different way, I might have gone SOC. I might have. Mm-hmm. It's been really cool. But it's so important, though, to have, like you said, people that you can talk to. Because when I first got in, I had someone who was a pen tester. I had someone who was in GRC. I had somebody who was, you know, doing IT, you know, audit and all that stuff. So it was just like, I always could just go straight to them and ask questions. And I feel like, one, I learned way quicker and I moved faster in my career because I had people I could go to with like questions, and they would give me like real world scenarios and answers. And, you know, they would give me like some mentoring tips and guidance and stuff. So it's just like, you really do need a network. Like, it's so important. Like, I cannot stress that enough. If you're not building a network, like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
Right. And the reason why the SOC, so I look at it like this, most companies that you haven't seen in any type of news for like a big breach or anything, most of them have like a very good SOC, or they outsource to a very good SOC simply because that's the first line of defense. They see everything first. So if you got a fine-tuned machine right there, your problem is going to be easier, especially if they're just not escalating stuff just to escalate. Like, it's going to be cool. But it's nothing like working in the SOC, whether you're doing a night shift or you're just in the days, and all of a sudden the queue go from 0 to 100 real quick. And it's all the same thing. So it's a couple of ways you can treat that. And that might be another episode where me and Eric just talk about it, because, you know, he gets super passionate when talking about it. And that's dope. That's dope. So shout out to everybody who's doing the SOCs right now. If you're working in the SOC right now, night shift, you know, knock out what you can. Don't let alert fatigue get to you. Send some to them so they can handle that for you. But
also, your crown. Like, can we just say real quick, here's your crown. You're in the SOC.
And I would say, if you're at a SOC that's underpaying you, go find one that respects what you do. Because they'll find out soon when y'all leave how they needed you. And also, I know of some companies who center their business around providing SOC services, but don't take care of their people like they should. They do bad contracts and have their analysts slaving, and then they end up leaving. So if that's y'all, redo your contracts, take care of your people, and they'll probably stay a little longer. If not, I don't know what to tell you. But now we're going to get into something that you actually mentioned. Let's talk about mentoring. We know how hard it is to get into cybersecurity, especially with zero experience. Some people are coming from totally different backgrounds, and it's really hard for them to see, you know, their transferable skills when it comes to coming to cybersecurity. But as you guys heard in the beginning, she's a big advocate right now for helping people get into cybersecurity, and she's a mentor. And that's what we're going to, you know, dedicate this time for. So, McKenna, let's talk about, like, why mentoring is important in cybersecurity.
Yeah. So going back to how I had a network that I could tap people for knowledge, for information, having a mentor really helps you, one, identify your weaknesses, identify like areas that you can grow in, right? And then they help you identify your strengths. They can also help give you focus. So like a lot of the mentees that I have, they're coming in or they're trying to get in and they're like, I don't know where to go. I'm so overwhelmed. And I sit down and I say, well, what sounds interesting? Let's just even take a minute to look at the, you know, the domains of cybersecurity. Let's actually sit down and talk about them and identify what really pops out to you. And then let's do that based on like natural skills that you have. And I think a lot of times it can be hard for people to not even know what their strengths are. Having a mentor there, like, because they're like this unbiased third party, especially in the beginning, is they can really identify those like key points about you that are strengths. They can also say like, yeah, I can see where you struggle with being able to simplify complex terms or simplify complex concepts, or you struggle with communication here. This is what we're going to do to help get you better at communication. Or maybe you struggle with this. We'll do this instead to get you, you know, to like make that a strength. So just to start off, like having a mentor in that specific way, somebody who's in your corner, to not only help give you one resources, a network, but also help provide you like insight into like your goals, your strengths, your weaknesses, all that, like that's, you're going to be made. Like you will thrive because of that. We all need somebody in our corner, right? We all need somebody advocating for us, because it's really hard sometimes to advocate for ourselves, and mentors help advocate for you. You know, they help boost you. Like one of my mentees, recently was talking to me, and he was saying like, well, you know, I'm doing this and I'm doing that. Should I do this? I feel so overwhelmed. And it's just like, let's just breathe for a second, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to be okay. I know you. And I think that you're great. And I know that you're great. And when people get to see you, they'll know that you're great too, but you need to step back. And this is how we're going to step back. Right. And so it's just like, I think being able to be there for him and help advocate for him, help support him. And then also like the part that I love the most about being a mentor is being, getting to be a cheerleader for your mentees. Like I get to come in and like give that, like, you did it. Like, you're amazing. You're awesome. Like, who doesn't want that? Who doesn't need that? Right. Whether just in your personal life or even in your career. So like, I mean, honestly, I could go on about like the benefits of having a mentor, but like, we just need somebody in our corner.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And that was something, what's it? I don't know, it was my LinkedIn post, but a guy, well, I think he reached out to me a while back, and then we talked, I think, behind the scenes or whatever on LinkedIn. He was just asking for help. He was a prior military person. And I was just telling him, he was already in school for cybersecurity. I was kind of telling him, hey, do what you, keep on doing what you're doing, post more. And reach out to people that have the roles that you want to do in cybersecurity on LinkedIn, and just, hey, message them. Everybody not going to answer, but you just never know. And like I said, this is probably episode number, 50 or close to 50. I think it's like 49. But anyway, I always talk about like, hey, if Dayspring never reached out to me 2 years ago, we would have never met. And I would have never just became like, you know, a mentor of his. But you know, it's not easy to reach out to people, you know, but
yeah,
you just never know. The worst thing they can say is no. And
exactly.
That's what I was telling them. I said, hey, just reach out. You just never know who you might meet and how it may help you in the future. But with segueing into that, and I think I kind of answered that question, but we're going to also get your answer for it. How does somebody find a mentor?
Yeah, so exactly like what you said, right? You go out and you find somebody doing the work that you're interested in. And that can be really easy with LinkedIn. I mean, you can type in security engineer, you know, threat analyst, whatever. You can go in and type it in, and you can find a lot of different people. And you can just reach out to them in that way. Like, I know that might be scary, but you can. Or the way I got started was I went to a bunch of different like virtual conferences back when the pandemic, you know, was at the peak, and speakers that I really resonated with, I literally just reached out to them and said, hey, I saw your talk. I thought it was fantastic. I had a question about this. Do you think you have time to sit down and talk to me? And from there, you know, if you click with them, there's nothing wrong with saying, do you take mentees? Are you willing to mentor me in this specific thing? Right. Don't just say like, can you come be my mentor? Like, it needs to be specific, right? Tailor like the question that you're asking and the request that you have. Right. Mm-hmm. Because I've had people come to me saying, I want to be in DevSecOps. Well, I know you didn't look at anything in my profile, and I know you didn't look at anything that I do, because you would know that that's not something That's not a skill set I have. That's not my focus. And that's a real quick way to turn people off from helping you, is like, you not even doing your research. How are you supposed to come into cybersecurity? You not even doing your research, right? Mm-hmm. You're not even doing your own OSINT. Like, come on now. And that's a real easy way. Like, right, go to talks, webinars, go to conferences, connect with people on LinkedIn, follow your favorite author, right? Like, there's plenty of really good cybersecurity books out there that you're reading. Maybe go connect with those authors. Maybe you got somebody on YouTube
on sale right now for $20.
Always be plugging.
got to.
Like, even like with you, if you watch somebody on YouTube, like, yeah, sure, your message may go into the ether, but if you put a really thoughtful message together, somebody will most likely, you know, like, we'll probably read it and then we'll be like, yeah, sure, I can talk to you for like 10, 15 minutes, you know? And so, like, yeah, there's multiple different ways to connect and find a mentor. It's just be what's the word I'm looking for? Be mindful about it. Be thoughtful about the way you go about looking for a mentor. Like, don't just go and ask anybody, right? Go and ask people that really are already part of the community or actively part of the community. They're more likely to be willing to mentor you and help you out. They're already engaged with the community. They most likely would be okay with, like, even if it's just like once a month, every other quarter, every 3 months, they might be willing to like sit down with you and do that. So, yeah, there's plenty of different avenues to connect with somebody. Yeah. Just be thoughtful about the way you go about it.
Right. And for me, as being like a coach or whatever, I do still help a lot of people that don't even have, like, you know, my services or whatever. It depends on the person and kind of the stuff they're asking me and what we're talking about when I'm giving them feedback. Most people can tell you, even if you ask me a question on YouTube, most of the time I reply back. Or a lot of times people find me on Instagram or LinkedIn, and then they message me and I talk to them. Now, some people I just ignore because their message gives off, I didn't research. It'll be some small and I just ignore it. Oh, what cert I need to get? I'm not responding to that. I've made
You can't do your own research.
Right. Not only that, but I've made, you know, videos on, like, not only, like, a lot of times I don't even tell people all the time, hey, go get my book. I said, hey, you know what? I made a video last year about, hey, this is why you're not getting cybersecurity interviews. Go check this video out and it should help you figure out how to research how to land that role. And, sometimes people ask me questions that are consultation questions. And I'm like, look, man, we need a consultation. If not, you know, I don't know what to tell you, but I don't have time to really give you a detailed answer of, like, all this stuff. Now, when you already did your research and you just asking my advice maybe on something and it's super short, sure, I'll respond. And that's, you know, what mentoring kind of looks like for me. I'm not coaching you per se. You're already doing your own work. You just come to me about my thoughts and what I think about a couple of things here that I'm not the person that's, hey, did you do this or blah, blah, blah. I'm not checking on you. I don't check on, like, you know, mentees. I may just say what's going on, what you're working on, but for clients, like, I actually will tap in with you and see what's going on, and, like, you know, why you're frustrated and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, another topic that you want to talk about is, like, you know, how to get the most out of your mentorship.
Yeah. So, like, touching on you saying, like, I don't check in on my mentees versus, you know, how I might say, like, I'm in your corner, I'm doing this, first of all, like, you have to make sure that you find the right mentor fit, right? Not every mentorship is the same, right? Yeah. Not everybody is willing to do the same work. Mentorship for you looks different than mentorship for me. So first, you need to identify, one, the type of mentorship you're looking for. Are you looking more for just, like, coaching? Or are you looking more for, like, sponsorship? Or are you looking more for someone to, like, just touch base, keep you accountable? Or are you looking for someone just that you can tap for questions about specific, you know, information? One, you need to to do the work and figure out what type of mentorship you're looking for, right? And then you need to be forward with people about what type of mentorship you're looking for and if they're willing to do that. Don't harass people, please. like, ask that. Once you've identified your mentor, for me, and I'll just kind of give a little pre-scope, like, I first ask people what they're doing. Like, what are you doing to teach yourself? What are you learning? Mm-hmm. What are your goals? Where do you want to be? You know, have, like, first I test to see if you've even done your research. But like, the most that my mentees get out of me is I set expectations pretty upfront. Like, if I'm going to mentor you, this is how I do it, right? And you either agree to those terms or you don't. Some mentees, I don't do a whole bunch. Some I have that, you know, I touch base every couple of months and I ask them based off of, because I'll mm-hmm. do career development plans with them. I'll say, how you doing? Did you hit the goals that you set, that we set, you know, 3 months back? Give me an update on this. Why haven't you done that? You know, like, what are you doing? And then others that I talk to weekly, you know, and I do like one-on-ones with them, and we like, you know, I want to know what they're up to, what they've learned recently. Do you have blockers? You need support in this, you know, in this way. So like, the best way for you to get the most out of mentorship is, one, to identify what type of mentoring you need, two, find the right mentor, and then three, absolutely, you need to know the expectations of your mentor, and then also the expectations you have of your mentor. Be clear and transparent about that. And then, you know, four, actually do the work. Like, actually yeah. be consistent, follow through. Like, if you want the most out of it, you have to be willing. You're going to get out of your mentorship what you put into it, just plain and simple. You know, so if you want to get the most out of it, you need to be prepared to go in and dedicate the energy and time to it, because you're asking somebody else to do that. The time that I spend with my mentees, I could be spending on myself, my family. You know, I could be vacaying. Like, I'm doing mm-hmm. this with you. I'm spending my time and energy the same way you are. So let's be respectful of each other's time. You want the most out of this? Then respect your time, my time, and actually show up, do the work. So, like, that's my two cents on it.
Yeah, I agree. And honestly, a lot of people, even like that, like, turn into like past clients. Technically, they are still kind of like mentees, because I still check up on everybody. Like, I still do my best to refer and help anybody mm-hmm. that I talk to all the time to get jobs with them. Like, you know, people. Yeah. Tell you that, like, so for me, it isn't just, hey, good riddance once, you know, our transaction is done. It's kind of like, hey, now that you know, sometimes not spent money, may spend money on me, like, my Slack community is free, so a lot of people join that now. You're in the network now, so if I mm-hmm. talk to you enough and I get a good vibe for you and you put in the work and I feel like you can do something, hey, I may refer you to something or I may send you somebody.
Absolutely.
So never really underrate, you know, that networking portion of just being connected to people that, you know, are where mm-hmm. you want to eventually be at. And you actually kind of said it earlier, but what is the difference? Because I've seen this on LinkedIn where people are saying, like, hey, like, you know, everything else is all good, but now we need some sponsors. Like, what is a sponsor?
Yeah. So a sponsor is somebody who is going to, like, it's more monetary based, right? So I do a little bit of both. I do mentorship and sponsoring. So for those who I sponsor, and these typically tend to be like top level talent that I see great potential in, and maybe they just don't have access to certain resources, I will sponsor their exams. I'll sponsor workshops. I'll sponsor boot camps. So sponsorship is more about, like, sponsorship is more about that monetary, give, you know? And so that's what I will do with some of the people that I see who are just like absolutely exceptional, and they just need that little extra push. I know that there are different versions of sponsorship to what degree, but it's like once you become a sponsor, hopefully you have more influence, more weight to pull. Right. And you can do that. And thankfully for me, I'm in a position in my life where I have that extra income to give, and I don't know what to do with it. So it's just like, I'm going to sponsor people who need it, you know? And I learned that mainly from, the Women's Society of Cyber Jitsu. There's plenty of times where we have people donate to certain causes, or, you know, a lot of the times we'll give out vouchers or free access to certain workshops like that. To me, that was, I saw that being so impactful to my community, that I was just like, well, shit, I want to do that too. So that's when I started moving over from just mentorship to doing both. And I hope eventually I can get to a point where I can sponsor a lot of people, not just like one or two. So the goals.
Yeah, and definitely, I know, like, for me, my sponsorship isn't consistent. It's on sometimes how I feel. If I got my extra money, but if I have, like, extra business money, sometimes I'm like, oh, okay, who? You know, like, I know I sponsored somebody to do the training with Eric before. I've gotten, you know, study guides. Actually, you know, you listening to this now, I plan to do some more giveaways. I'm very close to like 5,000 subscribers. So once I hit 5,000 subscribers, I actually plan to do some more giveaways, whether it's giving you some of my time. Previously, I gave away like, I forget how many I did. I did like 5 or 8, like just resume and LinkedIn reviews for people. So it really just depends, because one of the reasons like I started doing the reviews is because some people are this close. Mm-hmm. Where they need to be, and I don't always believe in, oh, you need to come do a resume at me. I tell people all the time, hey, like you just need to tweak some stuff, but you don't really need to revamp. I think you just need to focus on these things. I think you need to learn and do this and this, and you should fare better. Like, I think that's one of the things as well that I've seen benefit people. But, you know, without drawing that part of the show out, let's talk about, like, the last thing is kind of like, how does somebody find a sponsor? Should they just, like, and I thought about, like, no offense to the ladies out there, I thought about ladies real quick, like, looking for a sponsor, right? Some women have no problem telling you, hey, this is what I want from you. Either you can do it or you can't. Now, I know that may not be the way for somebody to go about getting like a professional sponsor for their career. So briefly, kind of talk about what should somebody do if they're looking for a sponsor?
Yeah, so there are specific organizations that have sponsorships that you can go and apply for. I think most mentee or mentors are probably not going to be sponsors. So I do that because I feel like doing it. But like, if you're really truly looking for like a sponsor, and mind you, if you're like entry level, it's probably going to be harder to find a sponsor, right? Sponsors tend to, from at least my observations, tend to be for more mid-level to higher level in their careers. Like, you've already shown that you're an exceptional talent and you need somebody to like get you to that next level. But there are, you know, sponsors for entry level people. So sometimes sponsorship is just joining like organizations, nonprofits that provide sponsorships. Like, I know like the Women in Cybersecurity, they sponsor certifications. They do like summer camps that are sponsorships to get you certifications. So sponsorship can look different. Again, you need to identify what type of sponsorship you're looking for. Are you looking for someone to come and say like, whatever you need, I'm going to pay you for, or like this is a specific thing that I'll help you pay for. So I think the easiest place and probably the most like legit way to do it at this time without just randomly going up to people and be like, hey, pay my cert fees, is to go to these nonprofit organizations, go to these chapters. A lot of the times they will have like sponsorships that you have to apply for. And I mean, even companies can be sponsors. So you can even get sponsorships through companies that are doing like massive campaigns or programs. That would probably be, like, in my opinion, to start off with, like, start there, especially if you're like entry level, start there looking for sponsorships within nonprofit orgs or like companies or like specific spots that are dedicated to having like someone is going to sponsor you to go to Black Hat this year. I know it's just specific. And I have to go back and look. So I'm so sorry. But there's a specific company that is sponsoring people's like actual like Black Hat entire experience, from like paying for like the flight out to like the hotel to like the tickets and all that, so that you can have that experience. So they're out there. You just, again, you have to do your research. Be willing to do your research. Don't just go up to random people and say, can you pay my fees? Don't do that. Don't be weird. Like, go and find legit ways to get sponsored.
That's dope. Cause I didn't know all that. I do know I plan to, like, some of my things I plan to do in the future is revolving around like scholarships. I want to do like one for like my home church, for people that either going to school or want to get some type of cybersecurity cert or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Other things I want to do, probably give some more of my time and some of the other stuff I have in the works. Free sock training, like essential. If you can get somebody that can give you that and teach you like all they know, like Mr. Miyagi,
that'd
be pretty cool. It's just a lot of stuff that I do plan on doing, especially, you know, just trying to like really help people out. Besides, you know, the hours that I put into this is just one part of it. But I do often tell people like, hey, if you don't want to spend money, maybe, you know, fine. But I should have enough value within the podcast and the videos I put out to provide you with, you know, some good information that should be able to help you. That's kind of like what I go to that in my blog post. I've been doing blog posts for cyberwarrior.com right now. They're partnering with them. They are really, now granted, it's not free for their boot camps and their other things they have going on, but they really are trying to help people like us and, you know, Hispanic people. We probably are some of the, matter of fact, it hasn't been posted yet, but I've worked on a diversity blog for them. I'm trying to get the go ahead on, hopefully he saw nice. My email, but like our numbers are pretty low when it comes to cybersecurity. So they are, you know, one of the companies are like, you know, focused on, hey, getting more Black people, more, you know, Hispanics in their boot camps to try to help them get into cybersecurity, because they are, you know, we are underrepresented, you know, in this space. And, you know, a matter of fact, Hispanics have, you know, more of the population than we do now, you know, in America. So they definitely should be represented more when it comes to cybersecurity as well. But that's a whole different conversation when it comes to like access and exposure and gatekeeping. Some of the things that I did touch on in the article, why it's hard for us to actually get in. But I don't want to keep you here all night. It's a Friday night and I can do this for hours. you know, I can.
Same. I'm a chatterbox. So.
right. But I just want to say, you know, what are some quick things you want to leave the people with? And for our listeners, like, you know, how can they keep in touch with you?
Yeah, so you can keep in touch with me mainly on Twitter at CyberKenna. You can also connect with me on LinkedIn under McKenna Yakey. And I have a website. It's like CyberKenna, you know, .com. You can go to that, where I have like some free resources that I've curated. Attaches to my blog post and stuff. But like the easiest way is to connect with me through Twitter. I'm pretty active on there. So feel free to like follow me and feel free to DM me if you have any questions. But like some things I want to leave off with tonight is, like we were talking about, build a network. You know, even if you're not in tech, even if you're not in cybersecurity yet, reach out to people, follow people, stay connected. And, you know, if you really want to take your career to the next stage, if you really want to make that transition, find a mentor. Definitely reach out. There are different things. Like, I think there's Cyber Mentor Dojo, where they have like, it's completely dedicated to connecting people with mentors. There's lots of different things like that. But like, find a mentor. Definitely, like, I cannot speak highly enough about mentorships. And like, shoot, even I like posted earlier today, I'm like, it's kind of ironic how much I talk about mentorship and I haven't had one in a really long time. So I'm going to get back to finding me, my own mentor so that I can get to my next level in my career. But yeah, just connect, build a community. Like, it is so much easier to do this when you're connected to community. And if you're sitting here saying like, I can't get into cybersecurity and no one knows you, I mean, it's a pretty tight-knit, small community. Let's be honest. Like, a lot of us know each other. And the easiest way a lot of the times is to be part of the community. Like, my first original mentor told me, you know, before you start asking the community to do something for you, what are you doing for the community? How are you giving back to the community? How are you being part of the community? And she was absolutely right. And that was what geared me towards going to WSC and then eventually mentorship and all that. So the community has been more than generous to me for all that I have put into it. I have gotten that double, you know, triple back. So if anything I can and leave you with is go out, go find somebody to connect with. Go reach out, go ask people questions, and then hopefully try to find yourself a mentor and take it to the next level. Yeah.
That's dope. You guys already know what I'm about. And matter of fact, you just gave me an idea about my Slack space, about probably getting some more professionals in there and maybe even having a mentor channel. So that might be something that could be in the works.
Put me in it.
I know, for real. Because I've been... One of the hardest things of being like a one-man army is like trying to figure out like how to do all the, not figure out. I just don't have the time to cultivate that community like I want to. And I've been probably looking for some other people to probably just, you know, liven it up. So definitely, if your listeners,
listen,
be on the lookout for
Eric,
that.
Me and Eric, you need us as co-leads, co-hosts. You need me and
you already, I have no problem. Like, mm-hmm. 5 seconds. It doesn't, you know, take no time. But, yeah, I appreciate you for joining us today. I know the listeners will appreciate this. It was very good because I don't think a lot of them probably even looked at mentorship in that way. So hopefully they got a lot out of the mentorship talk. But guys, I appreciate y'all been rocking with me. Y'all have really been doing your thing on the downloads for the podcast. Let's keep it up. And as always, as I say, let's stay textual. Until next time, we out. What's going on, guys? It's been another episode of Textual Talk. I appreciate you guys for really watching this all the way to the end and really supporting the channel. It's really been helping it grow. If you like what you saw today or listened to, please leave a review. It really helps the podcast when it comes to the analytics and the algorithm, and it really helps me get out there. So I appreciate everybody, and like I always say, let's stay textual. Until next time.